All right, I got a familiar face on here today, head coach Kyle Hoffman, head coach of men's and women's tennis at Salem University. How are you doing today, coach?
Doing good. You look kind of familiar.
Yeah, I know. It's been a little while since we've seen each other. It's actually pretty weird, right?
I know.
Or maybe you're enjoying not seeing me. I don't know.
That's a loaded question there, Alec.
Sheesh. You know, I guess where we'll start at, you know, my introduction of Coach Kyle Hoffman is, you know, we knew each other well before he was even my coach at Fairmont. He wasn't the coach that recruited me at Fairmont, which probably a lot of my players at Fairmont or at Salem don't even know, really. But he was kind of my personal coach when I was in high school for a little bit towards the end. And he ended up being my coach in college. And now I kind of work for him at Salem. So we've had a lot of history together. He's had a lot of Alec Moran in his life, for better or for worse.
It's hard to get rid of this guy.
Yeah. I like to say I'm like a cockroach. You really can't get rid of me. But, you know, Coach, you know, for your own introduction, you know, kind of give us an idea of, you know, your tennis playing background, you know, as a former player in the Wiviat Conference to coaching in the MEC to now still coaching in Division II.
Yeah. Appreciate you having me on, first and foremost. I think kind of just like how I can't get rid of you, I can't seem to get rid of being in the Atlantic region. You know, as a former player, I played at West Virginia Wesleyan College back in the early 2000s. With that, ended up having a pretty good career, especially the second half. A lot of ups and downs in that program. You know, had some really strong teams in my early years there, and then towards the end, you know, got my chance to shine a little bit. You know, as a coach, or kind of after that time, I guess, like took 2 years completely away from the game. I wasn't even doing that kind of thing. Kind of rolled myself back into, you know, wanting to do some stuff locally because I learned from a grassroots program in the Fairmont area. I wanted to start that back up from something that had been historically been going on for a long time from Coach White. Unfortunately, you know, Coach White wasn't able to continue on with the program, so I wanted to kind of, you know, take over that and get people back out playing. That actually kind of led me to my, what people probably, some of you may know and some of you don't, is that, you know, kind of led to my world at the USDA. And then, ironically enough, after, you know, several years of working with USDA and helping a lot of other coaches and things, you know, on the sides with, you know, helping with drills and practices and stuff like that, kind of led me into my own coaching career.
So, you know, now that you got a little bit of coach's background, obviously I kind of already said he took over at Fairmont State, my sophomore season, which would have been 2015-2016 season, kind of seems like forever ago at this point. A lot of stuff has happened since then, but, you know, when you took over the job at Fairmont, coach, my freshman season, we finished, sixth in the conference. So, you know, the top six make it. So that was Fairmont's first year making the MEC tournament. The year prior, I think they either didn't make it or that was actually the last year where everyone made it. So we finished sixth in the conference. You took over. Your first season, we finished fifth in the conference. So that's only one spot difference. But really, how do you think, and I know this personally, but how do you think the team evolved in that one season under your coaching? And, you know, what were some things that you thought about improving the team? And how do you think that developed in the first year and some of the struggles as well?
Well, I mean, I think first and foremost, you know, I'm a new coach on the block. You know, it's not like I'm coming in from another place and can point to things that we've done in the past. You know, this is a total buy-in thing from the players to say, hey, this is something that we feel we can do. And this is something, you know, the coach makes a lot of sense and he's got the credibility to do it. I was lucky I could kind of go back on my USDA world a little bit to kind of help me in terms of just kind of the knowledge of the game. I was fortunate enough to me coming from the Atlantic region, my own playing experience, and then, of course, you know, just with kind of my job and just an interest in the sport, following the Atlantic region. So I kind of got to already have a feel of, you know, what to expect and kind of the level of play. I think one of the things probably is a struggle as a player for you, you know, and the team at the time was we played a really heavy schedule that first year. You know, the record probably doesn't reflect the level of the team that we had even the first year. But, you know, a lot of that was really for me as a coach to kind of figure out where the level of competition was too. You know, a lot of times I found myself watching to see what the really good teams had, to figure out what we needed to do to be able to recruit to combat that. You know, I think at times, you know, we didn't get the results we wanted to on the court, but, you know, the guys really bought into pushing themselves, putting themselves in a place that they had chances to win, you know, sets and win matches, things of that nature. But, you know, just kind of a new life into the program. And I think for the most part, you know, we really kind of overachieved what we had going in with that mindset, because I don't think we were really expecting a change, and I wasn't expecting to come in. I know you played a large part in trying to get me to come in and start coaching collegiately at the time, but for the most part, you know, we really just we hit the ground running.
Yeah, I guess one thing I kind of forget about is that I was kind of involved in the process of trying to get you to Fairmont and texting you constantly, and I guess that just kind of gets lost in the moment, but it's funny looking back at that and kind of seeing where we were at. At the end of my freshman season, you know, I had pretty low morale about college tennis, and my experience wasn't the best for various reasons, but it wasn't fun to be a punching bag in a lot of ways, you know, both not just as a player myself. You know, I had a fairly decent season. I had some decent wins, and I felt I got better, but as a team, it wasn't always the best, knowing, you know, kind of walking into a graveyard, right? And to be honest, the energy wasn't always the best, and I had a lot of feelings that I had played my last competitive tennis matches when that season concluded. We ended up, you know, losing, I think, 5-0 to UC at the end, and a lot of me felt like that was the end for me. So, you know, having an opportunity for you to come coach us, definitely for me, it breathed a new life into the program, but just me personally, I felt like it gave me something new to chase, and it felt like I had someone that believed in me and someone that believed in the team's winning. Like you said, we played a super hard schedule for the level of talent we had at that time. I mean, I remember us being at spring break and we were just like, Coach, what are you doing, man? We just played
two Division I teams. Yeah.
Oh, it wasn't even that. We played Virginia Wesleyan, a very solid Division III team, which we had decent results with, but again, a strong D3 team. We played Shawan, who was just brutal at that time. You know, Coach Stanball had some really strong years there. Two Division I schools, and I don't know if there was any more, but you know, that was just murderer's row. And we were just like, what is Coach doing? Like, he knows we're not that good, right? And looking back at it now, it's funny for you to say, you know, you were kind of scouting the competition and seeing really what we had inside of us and where we could compete. Obviously, you know, that year we had gotten, you know, a new 1 and 2 and bumped everyone down. So even if the results weren't always there as far as winning the team match, we were definitely a lot closer in matches in set scores. And even in team scores, you know, instead of 9-0, maybe it was a 6-3 or a 7-2. So just seeing that growth in the first year, I think, was really vital for us as players, but also probably for recruits coming in as well, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I could laugh about it now. I know it wasn't really funny at the time in terms
of – It wasn't funny at the time at all. I can laugh now, though.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think the competitive side of me is saying that was brutal to kind of go through and why. But I felt like it was a necessary thing. I mean, we were lucky that we had a lot of guys that, you know, kind of bought into what we were doing at the time, kind of learned that they were probably going to be playing different roles moving forward. And I think, you know, one of the big things with the team was that, you know, they felt like they had a chance. Like you said, not always maybe not getting the result they wanted, but definitely having some opportunities to, you know, take sets off guys, you know, have chances to get some break points and things like that, and just really just not going through the motions. And honestly, I think the, you know, your freshman year, I can remember several conversations. You may not even remember this.
I remember some of them.
There was a lot of texting me saying, like, you know, I don't know if I want to do this for the next, you know, 3 years. And I can remember the fall, and you guys will eat me alive for saying this, but like, I can remember, you know, us doing a lot of like just playing like tiebreakers and super tiebreakers. And I just kept thinking, like, at the time, like, if I'm beating some of the guys on the team, that's probably not a good thing. But what I was learning was that, you know, mentally guys were just checked out. And so it was really just trying to say, like, you know, do you really want this old guy coming out there and beating you on the court? Like, you know, let's put some time and effort into this thing and get things turned around. And so, you know, for the most part, like, we got a real good feel that spring of, like, you know, who was really going to be working at it, you know, guys that maybe looking at different roles and things like that. I know tons of hard conversations at the end of the year with a lot of guys. You know, something I think is really tough for any first year coach at any school or, you know, anywhere that you're going. But, you know, moving forward with that, I think playing the tougher schedule, you know, players, you know, strong players really want to play a tough schedule. You know, that's what they're looking to do. Traveling around, we definitely did a lot of that. And, you know, just trying to make it attractive. I mean, we had the time, we had the facility, and, you know, we had the resources to, you know, bring in good players. And we were fortunate enough to get a couple guys there for the spring that, like you said, you know, kind of changed everything in terms of, you know, you bring in a one and a two, and all of a sudden, like, everybody's bumping down, and it's a whole different, you know, feel. But that was kind of the starting block for what we wanted to do.
And one last piece I'd like to talk about that season before we move on. I'd like to hear your opinion on what one of your first highs of that season were for you. For me personally, you know, the Shepherd match that season, my sophomore year, was a big deal to us. And I think we all made it a point that, you know, we wanted to beat those guys. We'd lost the previous year 8-1 when we were similar in talent. I mean, should have been maybe 6-3. But I think winning that match, and especially like we did, we knew it was going to be – we thought it would be a close one. We come out and sweep the doubles, and then we end up – I think we win 7-2. For me, that was one of the first moments where I was like, okay, we just boat raced a decent team, you know, and look at the pieces we have. Like, if we build on this, this is going to be something special. Like, that was probably the first time Fairmont State had beaten Shepherd in men's tennis. I know since Coach Pugh had been there, but, you know, maybe in a long time, I wasn't exactly sure.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably go a little further back in a weird way that I felt like the Norfolk State match was probably the first one that guys really started to kind of believe. It was just an absolutely wild match as it was. playing a D1 school, last match on the trip, playing at like, I think it was like 9 or 10 in the morning. You know, I think that was your highlight of beating a D1 player at the time. So kudos to you for that. But, you know, I think we lost that match like 4-3 or something like that.
4-3, yeah. I won in singles. Ryan was down a set, but the guy ended up retiring. And then we got a four.
He was up the second set, yeah.
We got a four. Yeah, yeah, and we played the D1 format, yeah.
Yeah. But I think with that, like, I think the gloves kind of came off in terms of this isn't the same old thing for us. You know, one of the things that I think I was harping on is just kind of as a fan that followed the program at the time leading up to it was, you know, there wasn't a lot of, I guess, expectation, you know, in terms of what the team could do and not and that sort of thing. And I felt like there was a lot more opportunity there. And, you know, as somebody that had been a fan of it for a long time, like, I felt like I could help with that a little bit. I think for you all, definitely, I think the Shepherd match definitely boosted things to another level in terms of like, hey, we actually, like, if we put this together, like, we're going to be all right. But, you know, I think it had just been, 30 years kind of leading up to that, where, you know, there's just a lot of highs and lows with the program. And, you know, that seemed to be kind of be the mentality of that first fall that I was there. But I think kind of the roller coaster was kind of starting there by the end of the spring break. And then, you know, we definitely came back and got some victories that, you know, maybe we shouldn't have, or maybe we, you know, had worked hard to get. But that kind of seemed to, you know, get the train going.
I definitely agree with you there. You know, and building off of that season, you know, the real loaded question here, and I told you before, I get this question all the time. You know, people, not even sometimes still today, they're like, how did you guys go from where you were in the beginning? You know, Fairmont, I mean, I don't want to say it in a mean way, but we were more of a cupcake, you know. We were the team that in my freshman year and a little bit my sophomore year, I'll be realistic. You know, the Wesleyans and the West Libs, they were like, oh, we play Fairmont today, like, let's put in our whatever seed and we're, you know, we're not worried about it. So, you know, going from that to starting to build something your first year to we come into the fall and people were like, where did you guys find these guys? Like, how is your one from last year? Like, or I guess not your one, but rather, you know, your two and your three from last year aren't even in the lineup anymore and they're still on the roster. You know, we get an American commit, Dylan Early, good player. I think 2-star at the time, but had lots of potential, big hitter. We get Lucas, who came and visited. He actually stayed with me in my apartment. Mateus obviously helped us a lot in his recruitment. We somehow get Guy with Lucas, who's a huge talent that was massively underrated. Pair that with Micah, first-team all-conference from the year before. Who am I missing here? Oh, We get Matias in the spring, another right. huge talent, lefty.
Yeah, Tom.
Oh, how could I forget my Australian pal? And we get Tom, you know, who he had texted all of us on the team for, I don't know, 8 months before he even got there. You know, we talked to that guy all the time and helped recruit him. You know, people were just like, where did you get these guys and how did you do this? I mean, people asked me that, and I wasn't a coach at the time, so I knew about some of it, and I helped get those guys there as a player. But, you know, what were you thinking at the time, and did you realize the potential that we had to do what we did before it even began?
So funny you ask. I think probably that first year I was in kind of the recruiting phase of that, I wanted to get off the ground running because I kind of felt like we needed to get some guys signed early if we were going to be able to do it. Personally, I kind of thought it may take another year just because, you know, money issues and people probably wanted to see if we were going to take another step kind of thing. First, to be honest, how I kind of came across Dylan was just from my Wesleyan days. I was thinking like we had a huge pipeline from Ohio at the time in the WIBIAC conference. And I just always thought there's always really good players out of there. And I thought, you know, being at a state school and things like that, we might be able to, you know, grab a guy to come down. And I'm not totally remembering, but I felt like he had had an injury or something that had kind of like taken him off maybe a different track. And, you know, I thought we hit it off pretty well and seemed like a good fit, you know, at the time for everybody. And, you know, I was kind of looking at, you know, him and Micah kind of being the first kind of two big pieces to really kind of push the program forward. And, you know, you always get a lot of international emails and things like that that kids are asking about school and things of that nature. I've ended up making a really good friend with Danilo over the years. And he had mentioned Lucas to me. And, you know, I really didn't think we were going to have the money to be able to do it. And he said, well, you know, let's have him come and visit, see how it goes. I laughed at this day because, you know, he came and he was here for like 24 hours or something. And we took him up to Hidden Doors and like on his recruiting visit. And like, you know, he played, you know, toe-to-toe with Micah. And I'm like, all right, well, this guy's really good. We got to figure this out.
He beat Micah, actually. I think it was like, you know, just one set, like maybe 6-4 or 7-5. But he beat Micah, which to us was just kind of surprising because we'd already met him. And you know, he's not a big figure kind of guy, you know. He was a smaller, closer Quick. To my size. So we were like, that guy beat Micah? He must be pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, I just kept sitting there the whole time we were watching. My dad was assistant coach at the time, and I leaned over to my dad and I said, if we get this guy, we're going to be all right.
Yeah.
And you know, I had to laugh because, and I'll tease Lucas about this to this day, but like the whole time on his visit, I couldn't tell if he was interested or not. I know he was taking a lot of photos and pictures and things like that and, you know, kind of real quiet about it. But, you know, one of the things I felt pretty strongly about is that at the time, you know, the school really hadn't had a strong international presence as a, you know, as a department for international players. And I felt like our first big win was getting Marty there, you know, the year before.
Huge.
And
More important than anyone could ever know. With the off the court piece. I mean, he stepped up and played two or three for us in the spring, but helping us recruit Brazilians was the pipeline. That opened the floodgates.
Right. And, you know, I think that really made Lucas more at ease. You know, he probably had several reasons why he chose, you know, to come to school, but I really felt like that was a, you know, really underrated thing at the time. Ironically, not maybe like a month or two later, because I think that was all in January. We kind of wrapped that up. You know, we kind of ran across Tom who just pure luck, that he wanted to study aviation and we were one of the few schools that had it. So, you know, that was a pretty critical piece. And then to me at that point, I kind of was like, we're going to be good. And then it, you know, over the next, couple months, I think, Guy kind of jumped in around June, which was kind of late for us at the time.
Super lucky.
But I can remember when Guy had jumped in and it was just one conversation and done. And I was kind of surprised it was that quick for him. Now I got to know him over the years, like, you know, not a surprise now. But I can just remember going back into the athletic department and like telling them, saying, like, we've got a chance to win the conference next year. And I can just remember the conversations back, like everybody looking at me like I'm crazy. You know, again, we're talking late 80s last time the program had won the conference. And I was trying, and I'm trying to call that in June, saying like, you know, not saying that we're going to win it, but we have the talent to be able to compete. You know, and I tease you guys all the time too about it is, I really don't think that even after we beat Edinburgh that following winter, I don't think that the team really realized how talented they were. I mean, I sat and watched practices all fall and kept thinking, like, if we ever can figure out how to play doubles, because we had no idea how to play doubles at the time, that, you know, we could play with anybody. And, of course, you know, once that kind of fell in place, we, you know, had a pretty strong win. Edinburgh was ranked at the time. You know, I still don't think that we really believed. And then, of course, you know, the Wesley match a little bit, a couple weeks later, seemed to be the thing that where everybody was like, all right, well, you know, we can do this.
Would you say, you know, I think me and you talked about this a little bit before, but I think I said I thought the Wesleyan match was probably the biggest win during my time at Fairmont. Would you agree with that, or would you say there was one that was bigger?
I mean,
Edinburgh was the most highly ranked team, but just looking at the point of the season, and obviously if we don't beat Wesleyan that day, we don't tie for conference. To me, that one definitely, because if you would have told me 1 year prior even, or even 6 months prior, that we were going to beat Wesleyan, I would have just told you you were crazy, and I probably did say that.
Yeah, well, you did.
I'm sure I did.
If you remember, I think it was like early part of May, we did our sit-down conversation, and I told you, I said, I don't ever want to be sitting down having these conversations this week ever again. My goal is to still be playing tennis. And I said, this is just not a good feeling. I know a lot of, from a player's perspective, I think that was, for you all, was the one that kind of, you know, got you guys really going, was the Wesleyan match. But I truly believe if we had not won that Edinburgh match, I don't think that we would have had the confidence to go into that match to do it. And I say that just because Edinburgh is an indoor team. You know, Vitor is an extremely talented player, and you just don't beat him indoors. You know, the guys won ITAs every year indoors, you know, and Lucas goes out there and wins a huge match to get the team going. And, you know, I think that kind of confidence on the court carried over into the belief that they could, you know, win the Wesleyan match a couple weeks later.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if the Edinburgh match doesn't happen, then that whole season doesn't really happen the way that it did. I guess you could almost say Edinburgh was the most important match at the time, and then obviously Wesleyan after that. Both teams very comparable. I don't even – did Edinburgh – Edinburgh might have been the higher seed that year. I know both of them made it, and we did.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, I mean, we beat two of the top six teams and somehow finished seventh. So, yeah, it's kind of one of those crazy years where you've got eight teams, Charleston too at the time, all really strong teams, all beating each other throughout the year. And then, you know, it just really comes down to, you know, head-to-head and strength schedule and everything to who gets six spots to get in.
I mean, even Shaw that year would have been like, what, ninth or tenth?
Yeah, and we had all we wanted from them too.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think we beat UC 5-4. I think we beat Shaw 5-4. I mean, at least in my memory, I know I haven't been around the college Atlantic region like long term. That's the strongest I think the region's been since I can remember in the last few years. Obviously, Shawan being as good as they were and still being in the region makes it massively different then compared to now. I mean, the year after, you would say probably our team might have been slightly lower level. It's probably close, but as in we were top four the next season and we were seven the season before with similar teams, or in my opinion, my junior team was a little stronger.
Yeah, I mean, I think your senior season definitely more experienced.
Yeah, that's true too.
You know, so I think that kind of counterbalances it. But I think talent wise, we probably were a little more talented.
Just slightly.
Your junior year, you know, I mean, you've got Micah, who's, you know, his senior year and extremely experienced playing
two-time first team all conference.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, it's kind of hard to say that's not a pretty strong team, but you know, the region that year and hasn't really been before or since for a while is
not what it was that year.
Just a perfect storm of just extremely deep, and I mean, it could have gone any way for tons of teams that year.
Definitely. Changing gears just a little bit, I guess, off the topic of, you know, our time at Fairmont. You know, since then, obviously, I think my senior year was the last year that the rules were the old format. Now the new format, obviously, with, you know, the doubles piece is all 1 point. You know, all let serves are playable serves. How do you think that the new format, and we just call it the D1 format because D1 adopted it first. How do you think that format has changed things since then? And do you believe that it's helped or hurt the competitive balance of the sport?
Well, I think with the D1 format, I mean, this has been a little bit of a learning curve for myself this past year. In an unfortunate way, obviously, with the season being cut short, kind of gave me a snapshot of it, and then being able to kind of go back and make adjustments from my end as a coach with it. I think it definitely sped up the game. We're all home a lot earlier than what we used to be if we were playing, playing out deuce games forever. But I think for the most part, you know, I understand why it was done. It's definitely going to get for especially the higher levels to for any kind of TV ratings and broadcasting for the maybe non-tennis fan to maybe, watch for a little bit kind of thing. But I do think probably one of the biggest changes for all of us has been is just the emphasis on doubles. I think a lot of coaches would agree that, once the point's decided, I'm seeing a lot of coaches just not even want to play or finish out the third match. A lot of times, I think there's value in playing that because you may need that match later on. Even sometimes if you're not playing at a facility that necessarily lets you play out a match when it's decided, a lot of teams are stopping. So, unfortunately, you see some players that don't get some of the experience that maybe they would have under the old rule in terms of just getting matches out. But, I think for at least my first go around in coaching, we spent a ton of times in doubles, just trying to learn the game and work on that piece of it. But I think a lot more now it's learning how to play big points. It's a lot more strategy, mental toughness. You can choose which side you want to return or serve. Definitely some advantages for being extra aggressive in this new format.
Yeah, someone just asked me this the other day, and it's weird, the doubles piece, because they said that the doubles piece, why do you feel or how do you feel that it's more insignificant? And it's true because, there's a huge difference from losing all three double spots and being down 0-3 versus losing all three and you're down 0-1. I mean, you're down 0-1. That's, you can easily come back from that. 0-3, you've seen it. I mean, you don't see that often coming down from 0-3 and coming back and winning five singles. But the weird thing about it is, even though doubles is more insignificant now, it almost ends up coming back to be super significant because of the fact that how many close, like we're talking two teams in a dual match that are competitively close. How many times do they split the singles 3-3? So it's almost like the doubles piece still comes back to haunt you in the end.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it's insignificant. It's going to play a huge, swing for going into the singles play like it has before. I think what it does is it allows teams to be able to kind of hide players a little bit. I think a perfect example, Alec, you and I this year is we unfortunately had tons of injuries on the women's side. And how many times did we lose the doubles point and then all of a sudden we go out there and we win four singles points and win the match?
Well, Bloomsburg on the men's side is a great example. I mean, we lost one and two doubles on the men's to start. We didn't go out on three doubles. So we've essentially lost all three doubles and we come out, we win the match 4-3 hanging by, but in the old format going down 0-3, we lose that match.
Right. And I think for the, we had that happen, what, I think three times this year where really we, I'm thinking the Slippery Rock match and yep. I think the Michigan Tech match, we lost the doubles point there. Or maybe we didn't, but.
No, we won the doubles point.
Well, we did win the
We actually
point,
forfeited yeah. three doubles. We won two and one doubles, granted against the best team on our schedule, mind you. And we win the doubles point with only two spots, which is nuts looking back, and then win the match with four total players. Completely crazy.
Yeah, and again, if we were playing the old format with Definitely four players, yeah. we have no chance. We lose three spots right off the bat. I mean, that's just it kind of helps you stay in the game, but at the same time too, like I'm not sure how much it hurts or helps. Teams that maybe trying to stack all their money for their top couple players and then just trying to rot it out at the bottom or whatever the case may be, but. Definitely doesn't show the depths of the really good teams, so to speak. Whereas, teams that are really deep, a lot of times that kind of comes into play, especially later in the season where you can kind of get away with that in times, especially if you have injuries and stuff.
Absolutely. Speaking on rule changes a little bit, when you were the coach at Fairmont, I think, is when the transfer portal kind of started to come to fruition. And, you know, kind of that had been a big thing among NCAA, you know, more so for football and basketball. It had been, you know, kind of talked about, and it's kind of came to life since you started coaching. How has it transformed in the last few years that you've been here, and how do you think it's positively or negatively impacted our sport in particular, but really the NCAA as a whole?
Yeah, I think with the portal, it kind of was set up right when I was leaving. It's one of those things that I don't think anybody really paid any attention to. You know, for the most part, I think in the past, the kids were, you know, if they were transferring, they were reaching out to you because there was a reason for that. You know, that you had a program that they were interested in. You know, they're interested in playing for that school, or they had a friend that went to that school. I think a lot more what you see with the transfer portal now is like, kids just want to see what their market is. You know, I think a lot of times is they're just putting themselves out there to see if they can get more money or a bigger school that may be interested in them. I think it helps some of the top schools where maybe a player went to a smaller school and, you know, has an outstanding year and was kind of under the radar or coming back from an injury, you know, a chance to kind of propel themselves to play at a higher level. But, you know, I think it's personally, I feel like it's done more harm than good from what I've seen, just because, you know, the smaller schools and things like that are just becoming like, you know, quick stops for a lot of players for it. You know, they're playing a season or a half season at a place, you know, just trying to get their name out there, only to try to jump somewhere else and trying to get more money and things like that. You know, a lot of times the coaches, you know, are trying to you know, kind of get that culture built where you've got the players playing together and playing for each other kind of thing, where it kind of lets that kind of me mentality jump in, because, you know, hey, I've won a couple pretty big matches, I'm going to go put my name out in the portal and see if I can, you know, go play at a bigger school. You know, and I think that creates a lot of hard feelings amongst players. You know, I know even from my, you know, our own stuff here, we've kind of seen some hard feelings sometimes amongst the players, and, you know, I understand both sides of it. I mean, but I think one of the things that wasn't really the intent of the portal initially, but, you know, you've got now access to hundreds and hundreds of coaches in your sport, and, you know, it's a free for all. And to be honest, like, it becomes a money game at that point. And I think that's just going to make it really difficult on a lot of schools and a lot of coaches moving forward to recruiting and retaining players, just because you're going to see just players in and out for the next few years.
Yeah, to add on to that, I mean, you pretty much touched on it, but it makes it incredibly difficult, I feel, for small schools, especially in small sports, to really build a culture. You know, you've only got a team of usually 10 or less in tennis. And, you know, when you have people leaving every year, it makes it so difficult to build a culture and keep these players together for 2, 3, 4 years. You just don't see that camaraderie of players sticking together for 4 years as much anymore. You know, similar to kind of what we did at Fairmont there. I know not even that team stuck together you know, all the way through. And those guys were all the same class. Three of them ended up finishing together. But, you know, we had six really from that year. And it just makes it so tough for smaller schools when a great, like you said, a player has a great season and maybe they're like, I want to test my market. And maybe they're getting X amount from your school. They go test the market and find they can get more somewhere else. So right. And there's nothing, we have no power against that.
And I think the other piece of that too is that, you know, the other thing you got to look at is, you know, a player may value themselves a little more than maybe their market is. And then you've got a lot of coaches now are starting to see, you know, players that go test the market and they want to come back. And you know, a player says they're out the door 1 week and then 2 weeks later they want to come back. I mean, I don't know how deep the friendships go, but like,
how can there not
be makes practice
feelings.
Really awkward for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, it creates hard feelings, and especially if you do that and then come back and it's like you're halfway out the door, halfway in the door. It's incredibly awkward, and like you said, kind of creates some hard feelings that might not have really necessarily needed to happen.
Right, and you've got to worry about that, you know, continuing to happen and on a larger scale for all schools. You know, and I think with what you're seeing a lot for even the kids that are getting their extra year for this year, you know, some players that maybe have a chance to do their master's program at a certain school, but they're choosing to go somewhere completely different with it. You know, I think, you know, I just was kind of looking at some of the top players. I mean, they're Hall of Fame players at their school, and they're going to go play 1 year somewhere else. You know, I don't know how that does with the relationships for them. I mean, I know we see that more in probably professional sports on a day-to-day basis. You know, Tom Brady comes to mind here.
Manning,
you know, yeah, I mean, they obviously want to see, you know, what what else they got left in the tank kind of thing. But, you know, I think that kind of – that's a little bit of society. That's a little bit of culture. You know, you got to kind of take care of you kind of thing. But it definitely seems like it's been a complicated added feature in the world for the NCAA and managing that, especially for, you know, Olympic sports like ourselves.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think a lot of coaches would agree with you from all sports, from all divisions. I think the transfer portal, for the most part, at least from our perspective, has been a negative in a lot of ways and made things incredibly difficult for us that were already difficult to begin with. Kind of moving on to – this is a really loaded question, I know, and this is one that I actually don't know what your answer will be. So I'm excited to hear. Hopefully some other people are as well. If you could redo one match in your entire career, both – either in preparation or in in-match tactics or things that transpired, what would that be and why?
I mean, there's several that come to mind.
Bring up a couple if you want, but
yeah, maybe. I mean, I think probably the first one that I really wasn't happy about was probably your first year of the fall. I can remember we had Wesleyan and West Liberty on the schedule for it. And, you know, typically in that conference, you don't play your conference schedule in the fall, but they were playing those as region matches. And that was already kind of set up, so it was really hard to get out of them. And everyone kept telling me, you know, from the other side that, like, these were important to play. But looking back, like, I knew those were going to be bloodbath matches for us. You know, I really didn't see anything positive coming out of that for us, especially the West Liberty match made no sense to me because we played the Hilltopper Classic the one weekend, and then we literally had to go back up the next weekend to play them again. And I can just remember, you know, after the fall season saying, you know, I will never schedule anything like this with a conference team out of season again, because, you know, it didn't make any sense with it.
It was unfair scheduling, I think, to us as players too. Like, I mean, the fall, normally you don't schedule teams that are, you know, the two of the better teams in your region, two of the best teams in the conference, maybe the two best teams in the conference that year. So I think even as players, it really, we didn't like it either. And obviously I know you said you didn't schedule it, but it really made no sense on any end.
Yeah. And I hate that, I did everything I could to try to get out of those matches because I just didn't feel like they made sense. But I think probably the toughest one that I regret, you know, agreeing to, and I think that was just more of like, and this was your junior year, you know, first, you know, really strong year that we had with the program, where we had everything scheduled up. Everybody was beating everybody at that point. And I gotten the call about, you know, playing Juwan. And I had said as a coach, like, you know, we're not going to back down from anybody. I know we're young, but like, we need to be battle tested. And, you know, I felt like as a coach, maybe that was my mistake for agreeing to play that match. You know, we didn't really have any preparation. We played a lot of pretty tough matches leading up to that. And we had, I think, the big one with West Liberty a couple days later. And we had played them like on a Sunday. I kind of got the vibe that like they were going to play a match or two coming up and or on the way back. Found out later that, you know, that was literally the only match that they came up to play. So, you know, we were definitely being hunted. I felt a little bit, you know, kind of, you know, that we've done something right if people are like making special trips, you know, 8-hour trips to come up to play us, kind of thing. But looking back probably now, I probably wouldn't agree to that, saying, you know, if you wanted to play us, you know, set up the schedule when we set up schedules. But, you know, I mean, is what it is. You know, we lost 9-0, and I don't think that team was 9-0 better than us. I know they beat Bluefield State, which first time Bluefield State had lost in almost 10 years or something for
in the region, I think. Yeah, in the region, like, yeah, closer to 10 years. Maybe 8 years.
So, you know, it's obviously a really strong team, but like, I know that came back to, from what I kind of understood from when we got left out of the NCAAs, a lot of people pointed to that match, and I thought that was really unfair just because, you know, us agreeing to play that match and losing that match at home seemed to really kind of be punished for doing that. When as you know, my thought was, is, you know, if you're going to be one of the top six teams, you should play all the top six teams. And that year, I thought a lot of schools were ducking each other, you know, and some of them still do. And then, you know, they're complaining about why they don't get higher seeds or lower seeds kind of thing. But, you know, I've always been, let's play everybody. So then there's no debate. And I think At the end of the day, you know, I hope moving forward, the NCAA looks at schools that are willing to play everybody that's going to be in the mix and say, you know, these are the teams we should take care of because they actually played head-to-head where some teams are just not willing to take losses. And, you know, I think if you're, you know, if you're not willing to do that, then you're obviously trying to hide something.
Right, definitely. I see now why that you'd say that one. You know, obviously that team was a 9-0 better than us. A lot of close matches that day too that could have went either way. Like, it really,
we had three or four three setters that day.
Yeah. I mean, so it literally could have been like 6-3 or 5-4. And like you said before, make no mistake, that Shawan team was very good. They beat Bluefield that year. So we were definitely punished for that. And I guess if we were on the other side, we may look at it that way too. A rough spot to be in looking at it from our own way, though. You know, like you said, beat two of the top six and competitive with some others. But that 9-0 came back to haunt us for sure.
Yeah, nothing to gain from that match. And, again, I think that was more of just the mentality of saying, hey, we'll play people. And, you know, at the end of the day, they started putting comparisons with that. And obviously, we ended up playing West Liberty in the bubble, which – you know, you just don't beat West Liberty in the bubble.
Again,
at the
bad
time.
Circumstances.
Kind yeah, of so, there. You know, us having 2-0 losses to teams that were in
A-1,
the top
8-1.
Or 8-1, sorry. You know, that really just came back to hurt us when they started comparing everybody head to head.
Yeah. Not meaning to cut this off, we probably went way over what I think we planned on 30 minutes. We might be around 45 minutes at this point. But, you know, we knew this was going to happen, obviously. Me and Coach joked about this. We said we could probably put down just a couple questions and go for well over an hour. I mean, it's kind of funny because we talk about some of these things off the record anyways, so it's kind of funny hearing some of these things on air. Coach, one last thing for you is, what do you really look forward to the most getting back to college tennis, whenever that may be?
Well, I think for the most part is, you know, building the relationship with the players. We had kind of really just started doing that with it, especially on the men's team. We really didn't get a lot of players in until February. So we got like, 4 or 5 weeks with a lot of the guys. So that's been kind of tough because, you know, they still don't really know us. We don't really know them. I mean, I feel like the girls, we've had, a little more time to get to know them as well. But, you know, just kind of getting more of a feel of the day-to-day. You know, I think it's definitely, you know, got its challenges in terms of just kind of getting back to the grind and getting into a routine. But, you know, creating that culture and the expectation for players, especially, you know, for us now at Salem is we've got a lot of young players that are kind of untested. So, you know, really kind of getting to know them better to kind of know what they can do and what they can't.
Definitely. The one thing I look forward to the most is just getting back to be with our guys and our girls and building those relationships and seeing them grow. I know you touched on the fact that we really haven't been around some of them for very long, but it's really fun. One of my favorite parts is seeing them grow and seeing where they come at from, like we like to say, baby birds when they first come, to seeing them grow and spread their wings a bit and maturing. So that's definitely the one thing I look forward to getting back in the fall. And, obviously, you know, people have seen our recruiting class a little bit online, so definitely we're excited to get back with our new recruits as well. And I think I'm looking forward to next season in a lot of different ways. But appreciate you for coming on today, Coach. Obviously, I think it's fair to say we probably have some more content coming, maybe some more Salem-specific stuff in the works. And obviously, Coach has a special guest I might be able to bring on the show, hopefully in the coming week. I won't give it away, but he's kind of known in the Division II tennis world. So appreciate you, Coach. Look forward to seeing you soon. Stay safe. And I'm sure we'll be texting probably in the next 10 minutes.
Sounds good.
See you,
thanks,
Coach.
Alec.